Just a real brief introduction. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Florida. I'm a nematology professor. I cover primarily row crops in North Florida. So today I'm going to be talking about reniform nematode, which we've heard a bit about at the conference already. I just have a couple pictures here. On the bottom left there is the vermiform form of reniform nematode. This is a female. It's soil-borne, and then up on the right-hand side is a nice picture of the mature female reniform nematode sticking out of the root with those sandy-looking egg masses around her. So reniform nematode, as most of you probably know, is a major pest of cotton along with root knot nematode, and it does pretty well in heavier soils, at least relative for what we have in the southeast heavy soil. So it does increase rapidly, especially on cotton, but sometimes the symptoms can be somewhat indistinct. It does affect cotton as well as soybean and vegetable crops. So a picture of some foliar symptoms of cotton. You see the uneven growth and stunting in a field with a patchy reniform nematode distribution. But in some cases, it can be difficult to detect this stunting and things like that, because after a certain point, the reniform population may become more even throughout the field. So you have uniformly short plants, so it's difficult to see if you really have a problem or not. So the second type of nematode I'm going to be talking about today are beneficial or non-parasitic nematodes in agricultural soils. And some of the things these nematodes do are cycle nutrients. They're somewhat involved in decomposing plant residue, at least indirectly. And they also have the potential to suppress plant parasitic or problem nematodes. None of these beneficial or non-parasitic nematodes, by definition, are going to feed on plants. And they are also a useful indicator of what's going on in the soil as far as biology and ecology, which is why we're interested in looking at them. And I'll note that crop rotation, which is the main factor that we're looking at in this study, can influence both the plant parasitic and the beneficial nematodes. And that's an illustration of a beneficial nematode. So this is another slide kind of reinforcing the role of different types of nematodes in the soil community. So, of course, we've got our plant parasitic nematodes, which most of us know about. They're going to feed on plants and cause damage. And this is an example of one type of a beneficial nematode. It's a bacteria-feeding nematode, so obviously it feeds on bacteria. I have illustrated there. A fungal-feeding nematode, or fungivore, is going to feed on fungi in the soil. An omnivore can feed on different types of food sources, maybe other nematodes, maybe it's fungi, maybe we just don't really know in some cases. And then a predatory nematode is going to feed exclusively on other nematodes, maybe those bacterial fungal feeding or omnivorous nematodes, or maybe it's going to feed on plant parasitic nematodes, which would be really nice. So then our bacterial and fungal feeding nematodes especially are going to be cycling through nutrients. They're going to be releasing nutrients in a plant available form, which the plant can then take up, which is obviously beneficial. So talking specifically about the project that I'll be presenting on today, we're looking at Brassica carinata crop rotation project. So Brassica carinata is a proposed winter crop in the southeast for jet fuel. And this is a project that I'm really kind of on the very periphery of. It's a very large project in the southeast. And the project that I was involved in is a crop rotation analysis trial in Quincy, Florida, involving summer and winter crops. So we've got Ian Small and Austin Hagen in the room. They're both kind of more larger players in this whole big scheme of carinata in the southeast. So why are we interested in nematodes with Brassica carinata? Well, Brassica carinata is a brassica. Brassicas have glucosinolates, which can be natural bionematicides. Canola, a related plant, there's been work done on that in Hawaii, and they showed that it was a non-host and it was useful for managing reniform nematode in that area. So we're kind of interested to see if there's any benefit of this Brassica carinata for managing reniform nematodes. So like I said, the questions are, in particular, are carinata and crop rotation in general going to affect reniform nematode as well as those beneficial nematodes? So the specific field trial that we're looking at here is the setup. We have four summer cash crops, peanut, cotton, soybean, and corn. And this is set up in a four-year rotation because of our winter crops. And each these four crops is going to be grown every year. So we've got each phase represented each year. Starting in 2017, it'll be carried on through 2020. So as far as our winter cover crops, this rotation began in 2016-2017 winter. It's a two-year cycle, so three treatments, fallow only, carinata to fallow, and oats to carinata. So for this presentation, the data that I'm going to be showing you is looking at nematode abundances throughout the soil profile, at least through the first 4 feet, and I've broken it up into 1 foot deep in the soil profile and 1 to 4 foot deep in the soil profile. And we're focusing on one time point here, which is spring 2018, which is after one full cycle of this project. So we'll move right into the data. We're looking at reniform nematode here. So this is our summer crops. On the left there, let me see again. We've got our reniform nematode abundances. And then on the axis down here, we've got our different summer crops. So this is what we had pretty much expect to see. Populations are largest following cotton, and they're smaller with our other crops. We would maybe expect to see a little bit larger population with soybean than we did compared to the other crops, but other than that, not particularly surprising. So I'll note that our populations here, we've got about between 1,000 and 1,500 reniform nematodes, which is, I would say, maybe a moderate population. It's not going to be killing our crops, but it's enough there to say that we've got a population we can do statistics on and so forth. So this is our reniform nematode abundances at those different depths in the soil profile. And this is also kind of what we would expect to see. At our 0 to 1 foot depth, we have a larger population than we do at the 1 to 4 foot depth, but those nematodes are present deeper in the soil profile. And this is something that research has been done on previously, and it's pretty well known that you can find reniform nematodes up to 4 feet deep in the soil profile. So looking at our winter crops or winter cover crops, as far as our reniform nematodes, we did see some response with our carinata, both the carinata to fallow and the oats to carinata. Statistically speaking, we had a larger population of reniform nematode with our fallow than we did with our carinata to fallow, and then our oats to carinata was kind of intermediate. And I'm picking out one beneficial nematode here, the bacteria-feeding nematodes, and what we saw was a larger population with our oats to carinata than the other two cover crops, which again is kind of what we would expect, because when we were sampling, this is immediately after that carinata was grown. The other two rotations there would have been immediately after a fallow. So that infusion of plant material is probably what caused that increase in those beneficial nematodes. So we did have some interactions with depth and the summer crop for our free-living or beneficial nematodes. So this is our bacteria-feeding nematodes. At the more shallow depth in the soil profile, we saw some separation among our summer crops, fewer nematodes in the peanut than in the cotton, so a little bit of separation there. And then at our 1 to 4 foot depth in the soil profile, we basically had no bacteria feeding or other nematodes. You contrast that with our reniform nematode, where we have a pretty sizable population deeper in the soil profile. It's something that we find pretty interesting. And it's a pretty similar story with those fungal feeding nematodes. At the shallower depth, 0 to 1 foot, we're seeing larger populations and some separation among our summer cover crops. We've got, again, we have more nematodes in the cotton than in our other crops. Whereas at the deeper in the soil profile, 1 to 4 feet, we're just not really seeing very many free-living nematodes at all. So to summarize briefly, reniform nematode was increased by cotton, which is what we would expect, and it's also present deep in the soil profile, although fewer nematodes as you get deeper. Initial data suggested that carinata was beneficial for helping decrease reniform nematode at least to some degree, and those cover or winter crops did increase beneficial nematode abundances, and very few beneficial nematodes deep in the soil profile. So briefly, just a little bit about where this work might be going. So I'll have a graduate student that will be taking over some of the reniform work that I have been doing. And one of the things I'd like her to do is confirm the host status of carinata for reniform nematode, whether it is a host, non-host, poor host, what exactly it is. And another question is, are there ways to increase the potential nematicidal activity of this carinata? Is the effect that we're seeing, is it a nematicidal effect, or is it just a non-host effect? What exactly is the mechanism of this potential decrease that we're seeing in the field? And then Ian and David Wright have a graduate student that's looking to do some parallel work on root knot nematodes with the carinata as well. So acknowledgement, certainly David Wright and Ian Small run this trial. We just come in and take some nematode samples, and then those folks from my lab as well. With that, I'll go ahead and take questions.
I think that you're looking to see is carinata a nematicide or just a non-host effect is important, because it seems like every person selling cover crops, they will seize upon a non-host effect or a slight glucosinolate effect and use that as a selling point. And the question comes, is planting that cover crop for the benefits for the cover crop enough, or would you really just plant it just for the nematode benefits? And I think more often than not, yes, it may help a little bit, but it's not an effect that would drive you. That would not be the main reason why you would plant that cover crop for nematode benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe just a bigger view of cover crops.
Some of the other people in the room that have been in the Southeast longer might be able to better answer that question, but I think it does kind of go back to what Bob is saying. Are you looking for something that's going to increase your amount of nematode control over the winter, or are you looking for something that's going to be better than growing a bunch of weeds in the field? Because certainly, you know, growing something like oats or a similar crop that is going to be a non-host is going to be better than letting your field go to a bunch of weeds that are going to increase your populations. As far as if there's something that's going to actively decrease your populations, I don't know as far as a winter crop if there's anything that's really had a whole lot of success yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For this project so far, I don't have any work doing that. I don't know if Ian or Austin have any collaborators that are looking at this.
There's a soil microbiologist, Sunny Yao, who is also working with these samples, so I'm not entirely sure. refuge, there's also some frustration in that there's a great deal of non-responsive stuff that's never published.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked at Tifton in 1980, and people were essentially doing this as a management plan at that time, and it was well known. I don't know how much was published.
And there's so many other factors. How are you treating that cover crop? Are you chopping it up and burying it?
Right.
Yeah, and that's one of the things.
Well,
All right, thank you.
Thank you.